And with that, now it is time to start the second hour of the Dr. Futures program.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Mrs. Future and I have the pleasure of introducing you once again to Dr. Bruce Damer, a regular on our show, who's brought us a lot of fascinating theories and ideas about the origin of life, about the design of spacecraft, travel to other planets. And now Bruce is delving into a new realm of exploration, speaking at the Science of Non-Duality Conference. I believe it's the SAND conference. We have Bruce on the line to tell us, well, what's new, Bruce? How are you hitting new territory here?
Yeah, gosh, I'm a little nervous about all this because I'm going to, for the first time in my life, make some statements that might be vaguely political to this audience.
Political. That is funny. Yeah, because you never talk about politics.
We hardly ever do either.
But maybe it's time that the likes of us do. So what brought you to including politics in thinking about life, the universe, and everything in it?
Yeah, or some of the listeners know I work on the Mars program. I work on origin of life. I work on spacecraft design.
Yeah.
All this stuff. And looking out at the world where we have potentially major ecological disruptions coming our way, climate change, and we can see the very beginnings of it now. We really haven't been hit by it like how we may be hit by it. But looking out at that, there's also this kind of crazy-making serpent that's on the move through the medium of digital technology. And sometimes it's called fake news, but it's a force within humanity that's subjecting humanity to this endless series of assaults. And it actually is threatening our entire future. Because if you have basically a war on reason and a war on institutions and a war on people that is like going unbridled, unchecked, uncountered, you not only break down trust between people, you break the institutions that the people work with.
Oh, so you're talking about the idea that springs from humanity that we have to destroy our current reality to make progress. And then, like with the Library of Alexandria, we have this kind of brute mentality that becomes violent just to take down all of the institutions that represent what is currently held as the accomplishments of civilization.
Yeah, and Mrs. Future, you're completely right, because throughout history, when these kind of forces have been unleashed, we lost the classical ancient Greece. We lost the Library of Alexandria. We lost a lot throughout our history. It was destroyed.
And really what we're talking about is bullies. We're talking about bullies who feel like they don't have an investment in the current paradigm and that they want to tear it down so that it can be their turn to be in charge. And they just see the whole thing as a power struggle instead of something more exalted.
I think it's more fundamental than that. I think that deep within our species and our communities is a lot of trauma. That trauma can come from an individual during their childhood, and it's manifested throughout their lives. We've all known people that erupt into screaming fits, for example, and that Eckhart Tolle calls it going unconscious. And that's a triggered traumatic response.
So you're talking about people who have manic polar disorders.
Well, everything. I mean, some would argue that all of us evolved because of trauma. The trauma was essential for our evolution.
Yeah. And Dr. Future, you're completely right. And what I'm going to on Saturday, I'm telling the story of our deepest evolution, which was basically the prosimian, the 2-inch long, whip-tailed primitive ancestor to us all 60 million years ago.
Those were our earliest, the earliest apes, right? And they were
the earliest. Yeah, they were.
And they're little tiny tree monkeys.
2 inches tall, is that what you're saying?
2 inches, and they lived in colonies. And one of their primary drivers was tree snakes for evolution.
So they would go out. I remember you describing it. They would go out on the limb. They'd see this shiny little bubble of liquid, and they would be a tree sap, and they'd go up and start drinking it. But the snake would be watching.
Yeah, and this would have happened trillions of times. And quite possibly, this is why we can study and understand screens and patterns. Because, we had to learn to see snake scales.
Because the earliest ones wouldn't know it was an enemy, and they would just be drinking the nice liquid, and then the snake would get them. But then some would escape, and they'd try to remember what happened, and they saw these strange squiggly patterns and associated them with the snake.
And we're the only animal that can read screens and do all this patterning. And that's what is the basis of our civilization. Hmm. And we're it. And other animals can't see pixels.
They would recognize a shadow. If like a mouse would see a shadow of a bird and run, it kind of more primitive.
If you put your cat up next to your computer screen, it will... And there's a bird on it, it'll take a swipe at it. But for the most part, the rest of the content is lost on your cat, despite it having a great vision system. But we've got color vision with acuity, strong acuity. If we were co-evolved in this way with tree serpents, what I'm going to tell in this parable on Saturday is that the serpent is still with us, and it's our media. It's the technology that coils around us and extracts from us.
So the snake is now the media, our knowledge. But it's interesting because it's a biblical reference there, too, the snake in the garden.
There really is. And if you notice people who are standing with their smartphone, including me, their bodies go very still, and their breath is held, and they almost turn into stone. And They leave the room. And certainly if this happened to a young prosimian, the snake would snap it down.
Easy prey at that point, right?
Easy prey. You're easy prey. And our attention is totally held. Even though technology like this is our greatest, most powerful tool we've ever made, it's cutting the other way. And it's allowing for the trauma within the people who are basically not happy for whatever reason to pour through the networks and traumatize and basically garner power and attention within a bigger group of humanity. And it's actually becoming a real threat, a real problem. And this is not just your garden variety government propaganda. This is being created by millions of individuals and subjecting billions of others.
So you're predicting that a snake will come along and take us out while we're not paying attention?
Well, it is doing it now. I mean, in the sense that we're mesmerized by this stuff and we're losing our contact with ourselves, with our communities, with nature, in which we have been for some time.
Okay, well,
anxiety.
Creating anxiety and trauma. And yet trauma can perhaps evolve us. Well, do you have any solutions to this?
Let's talk about it after the break.
Well, be right back with Dr. Bruce Damer, Dr. Future Show. Beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Sunny Santa Cruz.
Most of us are inside on computers.
That's right. Staring at screens.
Staring at screens.
Wondering where the snake is.
Yeah, wondering where our piece of the snake is for us.
Right now. Hey, folks. Welcome back to the show. This is Future and I, and Bruce Damer on the line. Bruce is speaking at the Science of Non-Duality Conference, and we've been looking at snakes and the Garden of Eden and technology and the strange metaphors that they all represent. And as we went to break, Bruce, I got a note from Brother Norm in New Mexico. He says, just tuned in after releasing a snake caught in a rat trap.
Ooh, do, 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 do.
Just happened.
How Twilight Zone. Snakes, they're everywhere.
So what should we do? We love our technology, Bruce. And look, the latest iPhone is so cool. This virtual reality stuff is amazing.
Oh, and we must continue to enjoy it and use it. But I think that what we put into it, the content we put into it, we really need to, in a sense, come to terms with it, because it could potentially threaten even the ability to do technology.
Well, Bruce, I have a hypothesis for you to consider in this cautionary tale that you're putting out here. Because what you're saying is that our trend in confusing the facts and not knowing the difference between what we can and can't believe in,
fake
because
news, real
of
news,
the fake news muddifying of information, is a big threat to humanity and is possibly leading to our next big downfall.
We're all victims of it.
Right? And that you're saying it's just inherent and it's emerging from the trauma of all the individuals who are currently alive, and they're all just projecting that they can't trust their reality. And therefore, they're creating this snake that is going to consume all the things that we value.
Well,
right?
Yeah, our news is about trauma, if you look at it. You know, it's all about things going wrong, wars and disasters.
And I've stopped watching the news decades ago because I just couldn't subject myself to
it. But all that trauma, what you're saying, is a reflection of the people who are creating its trauma in their lives. That's what they pay attention to. That's what's interesting to them.
Yeah, if it bleeds, it leads, right?
Right, and so many people relate to that because they have the same kind of trauma.
Well, and it's the intensity of the fight or flight instinct in humanity to pay attention to that.
Yeah, but the problem is we're draining our well of positivity and creativity and productivity.
Well, you know, perhaps only on that one channel, though. I think it's important to remember that there is a whole lot more communication going on in the day than just the fear and terror channel.
Like us.
But the thing is, if you talk to someone, and you guys live in a wonderful bubble, right? But if you talk to the average person out there, people who arrive here just for a visit, and they come in and they say, oh, it's the worst it's ever been out there. And it actually isn't. But in their heads,
it is, and that might as well be.
The sky is falling.
Perception is reality.
And they're being subject to this anxiety. And it's exacting a terrible price from millions of people.
Yeah.
And because a lot of people don't have discernment about what is true or not, or you simply can't get away from it, especially in this country. You know, when I fly from somewhere like Australia or Japan or Canada to the U.S., as soon as you get into U.S. airspace, there's this pall of anxiety and negativity.
Yeah, it really is stronger in this part of the world, yeah.
It really is stronger, and we're like laboratory rats.
Yeah, it's kind of like lighter in Europe, I admit. Hey, listen, we've got a caller from the outside. You want to take it?
Yeah, from the actual world.
The outside world, you know, somebody out there in this
bubble here, yeah.
So who do we have, Mrs. Future?
We have Dennis from SoCal.
SoCal.
Okay. Hey, Dennis, welcome to the show.
Hi. Interesting, very interesting show. You guys were talking about fake news and news in general, and how
angst.
How does that affect our worldview? And then you hear all kinds of stuff, and if you go and research it on the internet, it seems very questionable that we even went to the moon. And the whole idea about the
fake
Apollo
news stuff. Yeah, I know. It's hard to differentiate what's real. And what do you do about that?
Fake news article.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Van Allen belt, some people call it the Van Halen belt.
Van Allen radiation belt, yes.
Yeah, and we went through that.
How could we survive that? Yeah, I know. How would you get a straight answer on this stuff?
Yeah, so it's like, how do you know? And maybe we're being manipulated into thinking that, well, the sky is falling and we've got global warming, and maybe we don't. Maybe it's all just a giant manipulation.
Yeah. How do we know what's what? Yeah, it is the problem of our times. So what do you think, Bruce?
Well, we can all be armchair observers and hold our beliefs, but if you don't go out and get direct experience, like, for example, I worked for 10, 12 years with NASA, and I worked with Buzz Aldrin, and I sat with these people, and we developed lunar rovers and looked at a ton of science and a ton of lunar samples, and I heard Buzz's story of the first moon landing. And if you have that kind of wonderful direct experience, it's a rich tapestry. Reality is an amazing thing to encounter.
It's more than comic
book. If we stay in our virtual bubbles and read articles on social media and whatnot, we have a really poor diet. So I would always suggest go out and seek the real.
So if you want to know about space travel, talk to people who were involved with the space program directly.
Yeah, go see a launch, go to tour facilities, go to SpaceX, and you know, see that launch we had the other day off of Vandenberg that the future is
reported. Yeah, that was amazing up in the sky. I would like to just throw out there what I do is I pretty much believe that if I haven't seen it myself, then it's secondhand information. And so secondhand information is always in the realm of how much do you believe the source. And so you have to be discerning about your source, and you have to be discerning about your own capacity to believe or not believe and to filter for those things you want to believe.
And going along, Mrs. Fisher said, I come from a society where you are pretty much trained in skepticism first, which is Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So Canadians, initially, if somebody says something, they question the person who's making the statement first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're skeptics. They're born skeptics, just as Scandinavians are and whatnot. Americans, for whatever reason, born gullible. We're the land of the free and the gullible. They don't immediately question the person putting something forward. So then the stuff just flows.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of people who want to talk about
this. You're innocent until proven guilty, right?
Let's say hi. Thanks for that, Dennis. Right. And we're going to go to a few other folks now.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Here we have John. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Did you want to say something about the serpent of belief or the threat of fake news in our future?
Fake news, yeah. What are we going to do about this?
Or anything else? Well, what do you want to talk about?
There's a lot of fake news, and it's tough with Trump lying all the time, but I was calling, basically, you guys were talking about the moon landing and so forth.
Yes, and whether or not that was real. That's another fake news story won't go away.
Pretty much cited as the classic example of fake news. How do we know what's real?
And
I agree, because I had a friend of mine that he basically almost a flat earther, but
not quite. He just didn't believe in the moon landing.
He's an oval earther,
man. Pancakes.
He's a tortilla earther.
It's a pancake, not a globe.
He can take a 6-foot level and put it out on the ground in front of his house, and it's like, it's level. Checkmate, NASA. You guys were talking about, someone was talking about whether it's real or it's not, and the radiation belt.
Yeah.
And he gave me this video where there's this guy, and at the beginning of it, he's quoting Bible verses and that, where to me that kind of disqualifies it right away in a sense. But
let's just say it's not science.
And for me, when people say, we didn't go to the moon, it was this or it's that, and it's just like they have all these sources and reasons of why. And I'm like, if we didn't go to the moon at that time, it was a race for intellectual superiority between us, Russia, and China. The first people we would be hearing from that debunk whether we went to the moon or not would be the Russians and the Chinese.
Well, I'll tell you, have you seen the movie First Man?
Neil Armstrong, story of Neil Armstrong.
There is so much valuable insight about what was going on and how hard it is to get to space and how much you have to solve problems that you can't anticipate by doing the best you can and then seeing what presents itself.
It certainly made America great, unlike a lot of things that are happening today.
I'm 56. I remember when we went to the moon. I remember sitting there.
Hey, I'm 56 too.
Now there's a gold connection here.
John, but I was 7 years old when I watched it on a black and white TV. I'm the same age as you.
I remember that. I remember watching the body counts in Vietnam and all that stuff. I was fortunate to be a part of that era. But again, if we didn't go to the moon, you would be hearing it. I mean, at that point, it would have been the Chinese and the Russians saying, whoa. Not some quack, wacko, you know what I mean, without any validity.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like and the Russians and the Chinese would have been the first ones to say no.
I think all of us, if we could use a Canadian or Scandinavian nature, if we can just simply say no and just shut it off and just basically somebody come and take them down in a peer review process and say, look, this is nonsense, period, end of story, so we don't have to hear this noise from this point on.
Everybody wants their time in the sun. Hey, listen, John, thanks for that. We're going to keep going to callers before the next break begins, okay? Thanks.
Yeah, well, hopefully they're not putting a level on the ground. So anyway, all right.
No.
Thank you, John.
That'll do.
All right. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich.
Yeah, hi. So I'm getting confused. You people think we didn't go to the moon?
Not me. Personally, I'm a true believer in the space program and how hard it is to get to space and how accomplished we are and having crossed the hurdles that we've crossed so far.
Yeah, none of us.
Yeah, I'm so happy because.
Proud of.
Yeah, something to be proud of. Exactly.
Yeah. Very proud of it.
Hey, I just met Jim Lovell. You know.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Houston, we have a problem. 92 yeah, years old, sharp as a tack. And it was like, and I said to him, I said, Mr. Lovell, I said, so what do you think? Is there anybody else out there? And his answer was perfect. He said, why not?
Yeah. it's kind of big out there.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. He said, it's pretty big. You know, when he stuck that thumb out and covered the earth, and then he said, wow, there's so much more out there. Why not? Yeah, they don't have to be like humans.
Hey, guys, it's time for a break.
Oh, it's time for a break.
Yeah, you want
to?
Thank you, Rich.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Bruce, you want to hold on for another segment?
Sure, yeah.
Of course, yep.
Okay. In what you see. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Damer and on fake news, really. That's kind of the seem to be focused on the moment.
And the trauma that it creates when people don't know what is true.
We just had ads for all these propositions, and who knows who's lying and who's telling the truth on these proposition ads on the radio here.
Yeah. One of the things that we try to do with that is to bring in people into the studio to talk about the propositions and get their various points of views and let the audience decide. Because, of course, everybody here, of course, has their opinion as well. So it's not completely unbiased. But
I had a thought the other day, which is, our local water board, San Lorenzo Valley Water Board, people that supposedly have just told outright lies that are trying to get onto the board. And I think that in this society, I don't know that for one thing or another, but in this society, if somebody is going for public office, whether it be for a water board or for president, and they tell bold-faced lies, that should instantly disqualify them from candidacy, instantly.
But what is your truth verification process?
For a bold-faced
lie. Politics is well known for taking advantage of the fact that there's no time to discredit the lie.
Lies is
no,
normal.
It's easy. It's very easy. We have it in court system. We have it in science. We have it in engineering.
Yeah, what's that?
No, we have ways to determine if somebody's
truthful or not. So are you saying we should change the political process, and if somebody gets elected and then it's later found out that they told a lie, they should be unelected and it should go back to before?
I think that during the vetting process and during campaigning, if somebody is outright falsifying data and facts, they should be pulled from the slate, period.
Well, you're acting like lies haven't put people in power and kept them there.
I would say
people have depended on lies as part of their strategy.
They have, but it produces very damaging leaders that have very poor characters and end up producing a huge amount of destruction.
And yet that's what we expect now from the leadership, that we expect them to be complete opportunists.
Well,
their goal is to get elected instead of to represent any kind of accountability.
Remember, we have a Canadian perspective on this, too. Bruce is Trudeau. We're Trump. It's a different world.
Right. And we need very high-quality leadership. And somebody who goes to that low state of basically making shit up is not fit for leadership, period. End of story.
Yeah.
And I think that if we can just bring that as a norm in, we're going to get better leaders, and we as a citizenry deserve to have the best leadership. And people who lie to us and say in our business or in our family life, we don't take that. Why should we take that for the leadership that we're getting?
Well, that's part of the powerlessness of the voting system. Once you've cast your vote, that's it. You don't have anything after that except the next vote.
But parties should pull their candidates if their candidates are found. If a candidate murdered someone, they would pull them off the slate.
Sure.
So
Sure, but
the murdering of truth, they should be pulled off the slate, period, during campaigning.
It's just that reality is a lot of gray, and who is the arbiters of this?
No, but there were things in the Trump bald-faced campaign lies, that maybe. Were bald-faced lies. Yeah, absolutely. Germany got Adolf Hitler riding on the back of bald-faced lies, and he writes in his writings that you must tell the big lie, not little ones. You must concoct and tell big lies because people are more likely to accept them. Now, this is a man who had that as a personal philosophy.
Wouldn't you say that most politicians consider...
Let's talk about the nature of truth and lying, because most people, if they are liars, only about half of them recognize that they are liars, because when you're presenting a convincing story, the first person you have to convince is yourself. And a lot of people don't know the difference in their own minds between what is true and what is a fraction of the truth that they just embrace for the moment while holding the contradiction.
That's why you have society and you have committees and you have parties and you have courts and you have the court of public opinion. I mean, that's just why...
You think there's more truth at the level of a peer review process than in an individual?
Oh, definitely. That's why we use peer review at every stage, and certainly in science and engineering, product development, juries, judges, and convictions are all, it's all peer review because we have to be careful. But we need that because you're right, the individual is very fallible, and often their memory can't be trusted or whatever, but the consequence to society is big if you have individuals like that in any kind of leadership.
Well, I think that what this current era of the investigation of false news is all about is that the peer review process is also fallible because it can be manipulated through false slogans, false beliefs, targeted advertising to people's preconceived notions. There's all kinds of ways to mass hypnotize people to believe something that isn't true.
In a sense, there isn't a peer review process for news. Bob Woodward's book on the White House, which I haven't read, but I've read reviews of it, it seems like he's a qualified source. And this man's tracked 6 or 7 presidential administrations and helped one of them get ousted or got rid of a bad one. So this is a guy that went to the source. He went to White House staffers and all kinds of people to get first-person recountings on the situation. So that's a good one. That's really good data.
Okay.
How about, since technology, as the snake, got us into all of this and hearing multiple points of view, perhaps technology can get us out of this? My suggestion there is, how about, like, for example, we're a radio show, right? You hear, we have a caller. Okay, well, let me finish this statement. And then we'll
I knew the phones would be lighting up.
How about a voice stress lie detector channel where we're interviewing politicians here at KSCO and the stress analyzer beeps to the audience whether they're telling the truth or not. And the person here, we have a choice of whether or not they hear what the stress analyzer is saying or they don't.
Okay, and so you're saying use a machine experiment to see how it changes, like a lie detector.
It changes their tune when they know that they're lying.
I have a better long-term solution, but we'll wait until we get the next caller.
Okay. All right. Rory in Watsonville wants to talk about truth. Hi, okay. Rory.
Hey,
welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. And Dr. Future, I want to know who's going to calibrate that device. And
me too.
It needs a peer-reviewed process before we can install this.
Quit turning over our power to the machines,
I just could throw one out I ran into at the Maker Faire, but that probably wouldn't. Just be fun.
So these are issues that there is what's the term? Inspector was a pup. We've been arguing these very issues. Yeah. And the point of education is to educate people to tell the difference between truth and a lie. That's why one of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt not bear false witness. That's telling a lie. However, when you're out in life, day in and day out, you're only as good as your word, and the individual's only as good as their word. If they're compulsive liars over time, you lay a track record, and people know, they say, don't take that guy too seriously. But in and day out life, if you're not buying something, and the Romans always said, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, it's not just for a product. It's an idea, concepts, peer-reviewed journals. There's plenty of peer-reviewed journal articles that I've read that I think have a political agenda, and they're just floating a lot of nonsense.
Well, that's you have group agendas then, right? Group agendas are...
anthropogenic global warming. I don't see the evidence. I don't see the historic, and we could go on.
Another classic case is, global warming.
And also the whole political process of not even caring whether the facts support the truth, but looking for opportunities to pit special interests against each other. People on two sides of the question.
So we have to be wise as citizens. We got to choose our leaders carefully as best we can. Over time, they have a track record. They're not consistent, truthful, they're turned out. And I tell my kids, the only place you might get the truth, and this is a fact, is when an individual is under oath in a court of law or before a congressional committee and they may perjure themselves. You might get the truth. Otherwise, you just got to be smart and wise and educate yourself. What else is there? There's no guarantee in life. What do you do? You have a bureaucracy of truth tellers? To go around and make sure.
Maybe we could find a way to be smarter about knowing what's true and what's not. For me, I like to look for the existence of contradictions as the indication of whether something is true or not. Because if something is put out as true and then immediately something contradicts it, then you know that who's ever putting that out is fractionated somehow.
Right.
They don't know.
If somebody comes at you with a claim on a product, say, in a scientific realm, and you say, okay, that's great, those are anecdotal stories. Well, where's your data? Show me your replicated data set by an independent third party. That's one way to verify. Show me 2-3 years worth of data, not just one event. So there's ways to do it. And when people are putting their hard-earned money down, whether it's a production, agriculture, scientific instruments are going to be launched into space, people want to see evidence of competency. So there's ways around it. I don't think it's a total loss. And let's face it, people in elected office sometimes, like our great president, given to a little hyperbole, but you look at their track record.
Yeah.
What is the evidence of, are they following through on what they said? What's the benefit?
Their scorecard.
Exactly. Well, thank you for letting me.
Any comments, Bruce?
I'm very encouraged by our caller because there's so much grounding and common sense that he brings. And this is the best of American citizenry. This is what America is really about, is independence, independent thought, common sense. This is one of the great documents written by a founding father. And I think that if we lose that, if we lose what he has, and I'm glad he's passing it on to his kids, if we lose that, we just become a nation of crazy people running around.
I actually believe that there is way more horse sense floating outside of the news media and the major propaganda channels than anybody gives credit for. And that the biggest illusion is that things are as bad as they are, because most people, their own actual experience is generally fairly positive about 90% of the time. But that 10% where they have something they have to process that's negative takes up more than its fair share of their energy.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wanted to bring one more point before we run out of time.
Well, we have one. We have to go to a break.
Could you hold on after the break? Yeah.
Okay, I can certainly do it.
All right, okay, one more point with Bruce Damer on the origin of credibility.
Is belief the death of intelligence? Stay tuned.
Let's hope not. Back, Dr. Future Show after this break.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Bruce Damer on the phone.
We're talking about the idea that if we don't trust the accomplishments of greatness in our civilization,
then we try and tear
it down because of our traumas. And we got to know what's true and what's not and how to tell the difference.
Yeah, and the SAND talk on Saturday is going to start with that, because it's a room full of people who are healers. Fundamentally, they're non-dual teachers, yoga teachers, medicine people, meditators. What they're doing actively in their lives, they're like the Jedi
of Star Wars. People come to them who are in pain, who are in suffering, who actually identify that the pain inside them is from some deep source. It could be familial, it could be from childhood, and they want to not cycle into depression or into continuing circling thoughts. And they learn all these practices so they can be liberated. So these are the Jedi that can literally go at the heart of the problem, which is if people are suffering, they're going to create suffering in others. You know, world peace comes through inner peace type of thing. This is a bulwark. These are people who really have helped a lot of humanity. But what I'm going to call for them to do, consider that they are a protector of the sanity and the very beauty and the creation of civilization, that they could actually be more engaged. So rather than waiting for people to come in the door of their retreat class or something like that, to go out into the world, to actually get out into the world, engage with so-called leadership, engage with the process, because everything's at risk at this point.
Because everyone's mental health is important to pay attention to.
It is, and even the people that aren't seeking
just
out.
Just to stay preventative medicine.
Yeah, and for every person that walks, decides that they need to seek their own healing, there's probably 1,000 that don't or don't know where to turn or just are suffering.
The motto comes to mind that if you're not part of the solution, maybe you're part of the problem. You can just use that as a simple direction. Like, am I focusing on suffering, negativity, revenge, all of those poisons of psychological attitude? Or am I focusing on healing, comforting, optimism? It really is within your own circle of thought, within your capacity to put something out in the world that affects others.
Yeah, well said, Mrs. Future.
Thanks.
So in a sense, everything else is a symptom, right? Of everything else we see is a symptom. You can't really treat symptom very easily because it's already out there in the world. And if you treat symptom with the same symptom, like arguing against someone who's arguing a pain-based sort of
position. Let's argue about which fake news is more fake.
Well, how about why don't we create less fake news and see what happens? That's why I was suggesting we have a lie detector when we're interviewing politicians.
I think, Dr. Future, we can't even do it with tech. We have to do it with very personal. Well, here's an example.
Yeah.
There's a fellow who in the 80s basically created the attack ad for the Republican Party. And he actually created the format and he launched it. And it changed all of politics. When he was dying of cancer in the 90s, he realized that the damage that he had done to the political system by creating this new format. And he actually met or called up every single person he knew he had hurt, and he apologized. And he called for both parties to stop running attack ads, that it's something he birthed and that he felt was extremely destructive.
Well, that's
and
very
wanted
interesting.
Him to stop.
Now, what if he had done that on the air? You know, like we took Collins.
Well, he did. I mean, he was. There's probably interviews with him. I forgot his name. Lee Atwater, I think is his name. You could probably look him up. But there's someone who actually created a powerful form of fake news and then regretted it later and tried to retract it. And it's hard to get these things back in the bag, right?
It is. Though I would say that if you're not afraid to learn in public, then you'll gain the public's trust.
I think no one sort of paid attention. I mean, this is before the internet era. But if, you know, it's almost like the founders of Facebook and these other companies have regretted how their platforms have been used, and they've tried to put sort of sane controls on it or do something.
It doesn't work to have that, does it?
It doesn't necessarily, but
it can take out the obvious ones. It's like an immune system. It'll take out the basic trolls.
But when you share a tool and it's coming from a certain layer of consciousness, such as the original Google, don't be evil. And how do we sort through all of the data in the internet and find out what is most important? That's kind of the beginning of Google, those two ideas. And then when you put that in the hands of people who want to find out what's most important so that they can do harm, then the tool is facilitating an unanticipated part of the human spectrum of consciousness. But you've still shared it with those people, and now you've revealed that that part of human nature is strong and well and still out there.
And I think like the Jedi and the Empire, Jedi get strong when Master Yoda said, Jedi, they get strong when very strong empire, they develop their skills very strong.
something like that. So as this thing is going up the curve, as this intensity is growing of all this stuff, so should the intensity of the people who can actually successfully counter it, the strong voices in society, the healers, the people who know where this is coming from.
Well, it comes back to the idea that the individual has to be the foundation of goodness. And it can't be a slave society where somebody is in charge of somebody else. Everybody has to come from their own center and create a strong individual and a strong ethic. And they have to support others in doing that instead of ordering people around and disempowering them so that they shrink themselves to fit into somebody else's agenda.
Yeah, it's a different self-worth. I mean, that you could say that that behavior comes from trauma, right?
Yeah, basically. It mostly does. We now know how people boot up. We know how to read the boot codes of an individual and track their individual parts that make them who they are.
And we know how to update the code, too.
And they can update their own code if they're willing, and they're willing to do the work.
Yeah, it takes the self. You have to be in this pilot seat to do it, to really change.
And I meet these people every day who used to be driven by cycling beliefs, depressions, all this sort of stuff, who managed to pull themselves out of the nightmare of that. And they're much better, and they're much healthier.
Yeah.
And so they can extract themselves.
They can become aware of the narrative they're constantly telling themselves that's keeping them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, realizing that you're in the driver's seat is a very fundamental part of improving your own situation.
Well, who else is going to do it?
Well, blaming somebody else shows that you don't believe you're in the driver's seat. You think it's somebody else's fault.
If on a daily basis, you're in your autonomous car, you're miserable, and you're listening to miserable stories, and you're going to get your wonderful food and your latte and going to your job, which is an air-conditioned building, and you have health and dentistry and everything, something's wrong, because your mental state is different than the society.
You're not counting your blessings.
You're not counting your blessings. You know?
You're not seeing the glasses half full.
Take yourself back 300 years and see what existence was like, and you'll say, why was I miserable for 1 second in this world of Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I'm not dying from the plague. I'm way better off than I used to be.
Yeah, my goodness. People just don't know how horrendous human life was for most of our history.
Yeah, I think there is an ignorance factor. People are comparing themselves to what they wish for instead of to how bad things have been.
Very well said.
Yeah. And what do you think of this quote? When the rose and the cross are united, the alchemical marriage is complete, and the drama ends, then we wake from history and enter eternity.
Sounds very mysterious.
The rose and the cross united. Well, that was the medieval trauma, right? And love and defense of love in what the Crusades all represent, the round table. It's one of the enlightened elements, the united alchemical marriage around the round table, which is where we all come together.
We have one more caller in our last couple minutes here.
That's from Robert Anton Wilson.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Robert Anton Wilson.
Thank you, Bob Wilson.
Margie, welcome to the show. Did you want to say
something? This is Norma Jean.
Oh, hi, Norma Jean. They got your name wrong. Hey, honey, you got about 30 seconds. Did you want to say something?
Affirmations. Yes, affirmations. A little exercise like you said at the church. Make two pictures. One, how people feel when they're sad, and one, how they feel when they're happy. And they have to do affirmations and be grateful. My hello to Bruce, of course.
Oh, that's great advice, Norma Jean. That is fantastic.
Norma Jean, I love
the abundance in my life. I am grateful.
Thank you.
Norma Jean, I love you.
I love you, Norma Jean.
Has come in your way.
I love all you wonderful people.
All right. Well, guess what, folks? We're getting real close to the end.
Any final thoughts, Bruce? You feel prepared for the show?
30 seconds.
It was so nice to hear Norma Jean's voice of love and sanity and care and a life well led.
And make a picture.
That's a great send out.
She is a testimonial to life lived right. All right. Well, thanks for everything, Bruce.
Good luck this weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you, El.
For the Science and Non-Duality Conference in Monterey this weekend.
In San Jose,
San Jose. All right.
Wish me luck.
What time are you on?
Black.
Saturday at 3 p.m.
3 p.m. afternoon. Okay, 3 p.m. afternoon, Saturday. At that mansion in San Jose there.
Dr. Future Show, KSCO, Santa Cruz, signing off.